Wow, man, Eye of the Tiger. Let's make some noise again for Brad and the band. Wow, that's an incredible song. I mean, I don't know about you, but every time I hear Eye of the Tiger, it like gets my adrenaline pumping, right? It like gets you, it gives you a rush. It motivates you. It pushes you. It drives you. It makes you want to shatter goals, right? Like conquer those goals, like go after something. It makes you want to create some new rhythms. And that's why this is going to be an incredible weekend for you all to be here. For those of you who are tuning in online, man, you are in for a treat. My name is Mark, if we have not had the chance to meet, because listen, we are in week three of this incredible series called Spark, Igniting the 187. No, that's a rap group song. But we're igniting the 167 hours of our week and figuring out ways and rhythms that we can become more productive. And so, you know, when I think about that song, when I think about shattering any kind of goals, the real meat of shattering anything or even achieving anything, it's really this idea of discipline, right? Like when it boils down to the very core and to the root of you being able to achieve anything or go after anything, you're gonna need discipline. And listen, you're going to need discipline no matter where you are on the spectrum, right? I mean, listen, so if you're here for the first time and you're exploring faith, or if you've been a part of Faith Journey for a long time, we're glad that you're here. If you have no faith at all, listen, this is really a really good opportunity for you to really hear what the real core values and what being a follower of Jesus is really all about. And so, you know, I'm glad that you're here, because every time I hear the word discipline, no, I don't think about the punishments that my parents used to give me. But when I think about discipline, I actually think about like my favorite boxer. It's Mike Tyson. I think about Mike Tyson. You know why? Because, I mean, it's Mike Tyson. And I know that for him, you know, to be like a boxer, it took a lot of discipline. I mean, you know, when I think about the amount of discipline that it took for him to be able to be in that ring, right, to really be able to fight. And the thing about boxing, it's not football, it's not baseball, it's not IndyCar, it's not Formula One. Like, it's not, they have a team, you have a coach, but guess what? The discipline, it's going to show up, because they're in the ring all by themselves, right? I mean, you're in the ring all by yourself. And I love, Mike Tyson actually says this. He says, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the mouth, right? I mean, everybody has the grand plan, everybody has it all figured out, but then you start to really see, you know, what they're made of and what that discipline is made of, because here's the thing, at the end of the day, we get to see their private dedication for the assignment. That's what we're really witnessing when we began to witness boxing matches, right? I mean, we're really seeing how much dedication did they have in private, how much hard work, what were their rhythms, right? We get to see it in person. We get to see the assignment. And that's really what boxing is all about. In fact, boxing matches that are lost are generally lost before the fight, because they didn't put in the dedication. The other person didn't put in the type of time, the type of energy. They didn't have the level of training. They didn't prepare their minds, didn't prepare their bodies. And so as a result, you know, they failed when it came time for the assignment. And I love it, because this is true even about my favorite boxer. Because, again, he used to be prepared. And then he started getting sloppy with his preparation. He started getting sloppy with his dedication. And then, you know, he kind of ended up like a funny Mike Tyson, right? I mean, he's like shadow boxing and stuff, right? I mean, he's like more of a video game, right? It was just like he wasn't winning. He started losing a lot of matches, and his life started to unravel because of the lack of discipline and the lack of dedication. I mean, and seriously, right? Like Mike Tyson, he was good until he lost to Buster Douglas and got knocked out. And we didn't suspect it. I mean, but he had just fought about 9 months earlier and was knocking people out in the first round. And then he came, and because of the lack of dedication and the lack of preparation, he went down. And so all of this, as we see him kind of come crashing down, you know, it points the spotlight on this idea of discipline. See, because discipline matters, and it matters regardless of the season or the assignment that you're in. See, because it's all about how that private dedication, it always requires discipline. So it doesn't matter how dedicated you are to a goal or to a task or to something that you want to reach or to the next level of your career, it's going to require discipline. And I know, you know, in your office, at home, you got all of this. I'm devoted. I'm dedicated to it. But listen, if it doesn't have discipline, you probably won't get far. And I love it, right? Because we're talking about like this idea of being private, this private dedication, right? Like all of the work that's done, it's done in the gym. It's done behind the scenes, right? It's done before you get the spotlight on you. But what I like about that idea of like, you know, private dedication for the assignment, this idea of like PDA, is like, it really talks about this private piece, but it's actually a public thing as well. It's a public thing as well. When you think about it, you know, you can't have discipline and not have it show up in the public sphere. And for instance, like for me, I have to show discipline like every day when I'm out with Noah. When I'm out with my 17-month-old, I've got to show some discipline. And you know, I got to show discipline because, I mean, it's kind of hard to not be affectionate, to not really show PDA toward her. I mean, look at her. I mean, really, like, I mean, we went to the zoo last week, and she's, like, waving on the merry-go-round. Don't you just want to hug her? Like, you just want to reach to the screen and just give her hugs and show her affection. And listen, that would be cool. Everybody would be like, oh, that's so cute. That's so amazing, right? And so when we think about that public display of affection to a baby, like, it's cool. But the moment I start doing the same thing to my wife, Whitney. No, I'm not going to show you a picture of her. But like, the moment that I do that to my wife, Whitney, in public, people will be like, oh, my God, get a room. Like, get out of here with that. Like, people start getting uncomfortable. We start to get uncomfortable, right, because we may not even do it as much because maybe we're just afraid to, right? Or maybe it's not that. Like, but what happens? What happens to us, right? Like, is it this? Like, maybe it's because we're just afraid of what other people think, right? I mean, look at those memes, right? I mean, you've all seen the kiss cam. But if we put that spotlight on you, the question that continued to run through my mind is, like, what happens between when we're kids and when we become adults? Because as kids, like, we don't mind showing affection and all that. But when we become adults, the narrative starts to change. It starts to change so much that we tend to not even want to show as much affection in public. PDA is kind of like, if people are doing it, we kind of may say, oh, they're those kind of people. But then I realized that there were some studies that were done, and they showed us that maybe what's happening is we began to really get distracted by the opinions of others. That we stopped being affectionate because we became more worried about what other people thought. And so we stopped doing the things that were very natural to us. In fact, we become so concerned with the opinions of others and trying to fit into maybe their circles or their sphere of influence or whatever the bubble is that you want to fit into, whatever those filters are, we start changing. And we stop doing the things that actually got us to certain points. In fact, I mean, maybe this is the reason why we stop having difficult conversations. Maybe this is the reason why we start or stop certain rhythms. Maybe this is the reason why we started a diet and maybe why we stopped the diet. I probably talked to you guys a couple weeks ago about keto diet, right? And now, listen, I'm out of purgatory. I'm keto-ish now, okay? So I'm no longer in keto purgatory. But listen, I know that this is the reason why we start and stop. In fact, we become so concerned with the thoughts of others. This is why we don't talk about politics at work. This is why we don't talk about religion at work. Maybe this is the reason why nobody at your job, your workplace, or your neighborhood even know. Do they even know that you're a follower of Jesus? And they may not because we're so concerned about the opinions of others, and yet this is something that's important to you. But somewhere along the way, we became so much more concerned with how other people viewed us. And we became distracted by it. And when you become distracted by these type of things, we start to realize that it impacts our public display. And so what starts to happen is the things that you're doing in private, in that private dedication moment, it never gets a public display because you're so concerned about what other people think. And that's the tension. And that's the thing that actually disrupts the rhythm of you being productive, of you having the motivation, of you being able to push forward and lean into what God has for you. And if you want to be productive, if you want to be the type of person that sees the maximum capacity come out of the 167 hours of a week, minus maybe the hour that you're spending with me right now, then you have to realize that the private dedication and the public display, they actually go together. That those two PDAs, when they began to come together, they form something special. They form another PDA that's really a PDA, a rhythm of life that was designed by Jesus. That's right. Like, Jesus has a PDA model. Imagine that, right? Jesus giving public display of affection. No. But he has a PDA model. And it's amazing. See, because that's actually how Jesus lived his life, all right? So I want to spend the next few moments just really kind of sharing with you the way, the rhythm of life that Jesus creates, his model of what PDA is. All right? And so the first thing that his model actually helps us to determine this rhythm, and this is nothing new, but this is something that's really important, and it's this. It's prayer. Prayer. I know, like, it's something so basic, but it's so, so important. See, because many of you may, or maybe you don't know. Maybe you grew up in a tradition that told you that prayer was something that was only really reserved for the priest or for the pastor. Maybe you thought that prayer was something that was only, something for religious people, people that had been with God for a long time. Well, listen, I'm here to demystify all of that because I want you to know that prayer is nothing more than just a conversation with God. That's all prayer is. It's a conversation with God. Notice, it's a conversation, and a conversation it's two-way. It's not just one way. It's not just you talk to God and you say everything and then you leave. Now, you could do that. It's nothing wrong with that, but it's a conversation. Prayer is a two-way street. That so many times we get caught up in thinking that prayer is this thing where we just give a petition and that's it. No, we actually want to talk and listen. It's because prayer is also an opportunity for not only us to talk to God, but for God to begin to talk to us. Because that's the way that we began to build a relationship with God. And I like it because Jesus models this. There's almost about 30 scriptures in the New Testament where we see Jesus who goes off and he does this. He goes and he prays. He has a conversation with God. In fact, we're going to look at this next scripture, which is essentially, it's a book that was a letter written by a guy named Matthew, who's one of the disciples, an authorized biographer of Jesus. And he wrote this. He spent some time with somebody who actually spent time with Christ. And he said this. He said, after he has sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. Jesus, the Messiah, the one who went to die for you and for me, he spent time praying. And what's so special about this is that you're thinking like, what does Jesus have to pray for? He's Jesus. Like, why would Jesus be praying? Right? I thought Jesus is God, right? Why is he praying? Well, he's modeling for all of us a rhythm of life. He's modeling for us the PDA model that all of us need to pray. We all need to have a conversation with God. And this discipline of prayer, it's essential. It's a spiritual discipline. It's essential. And listen, and I know we make spiritual discipline so like hocus pocus at times and religious, but sometimes it's just as simple as prayer and having a conversation with God. Now, some of you do it in the morning. Some of you, you do it right before you eat a meal, right? Some of you may pray at night, like when you're really tired and you never really finish the prayer because you fall asleep. If that's you, listen, it's okay. I just want you to know that it's important and that you should be able to set some time aside, that you should begin to create an intentional space to have a conversation with God. It begins a rhythm. It begins to stir up something inside of you that you began to see your life different, and your life and other people's around you lives will become different because you are now going to be spending intentional time and space talking to God. And so because prayer is always a two-way conversation, you're like, okay, well, what do you do when God starts talking to you? Well, God starts talking to you. Well, that means things are starting to happen and things are starting to manifest, which is a great thing, right? But it actually leads to the second part, the second discipline of this rhythm of life. And so it's not just prayer, but it's also this idea of devotion, right? This idea of devotion. Now devotion, I don't know, some of you are like, oh, devotion. I do devotion. I read my Our Daily Bread every day, right? I do that. Or you got the Bible app, right? You pop that open, you read a scripture, right? And then it gives you some things to do. And you're like, all right, that was my devotion time. And listen, all that stuff is great. Maybe you read a scripture, maybe you read a Bible. That's all cool. Listen, if you're doing that stuff, continue to do it, right? That all of that stuff is great. It's amazing. But that's not devotion. I want to help you understand, that's not devotion. And I know that there are times when we think about devotion as being this very super spiritual thing, and more so, we start to think about devotion as this idea of how much of the Bible can I learn? How many scriptures can I begin to quote, right? How much of Genesis to Revelations can I begin to have in my mental Rolodex to pull out when somebody is going through something and I just have it in me, right? You're just the well of the Bible. Right, and I want you to know that that's not devotion. Becoming an expert of the scriptures is nice, but that's not really devotion. It's not that at all. That devotion is actually being loyal to the fun process of being curious of how to make connections between your life and the lives that are around you. That the devotion is really an opportunity for you to become curious with God. Become curious with all of the things that are around you each and every day. That you become like a kid again and you begin to be exploratory with the way in which you approach life. That you have a posture. Devotion is a posture of loyalty toward being curious. I don't know what your spiritual background is, what your religious background is, or even when you feel like you're moving up the ladder of being more pious than what you once were. I want you to know that that's not devotion. That true devotion is when you're open to the curiosity of God. In fact, it's when you begin to be open to what we talked about last week, right? And if you didn't check out the message last week, please go back. It's on our app. You can check out all of the last content that's gone on. You can watch the whole series. You can catch up. We talked about play. We do that around here, right? We played Prince and had confetti all over the venue last week. Why? Because we believe in being curious. We believe in seeing and exploring all the things that God has created and how they work together for the good. See, devotion, it's an amazing thing. In fact, there's this incredible quote from this book. It's a book called The Curious Christian. And she says, Barnabas says this. He says that curiosity is a discipline. It's a habit. It's a skill set. And we know this because we lose it. That there was a time when you were so curious. There was a time when you woke up and you were looking for the next thing. I mean, I watch it in my daughter every day. She wakes up every day looking to be curious at every sound, at every bird that flies. She's curious about why the color of the grass is green. She's curious about every nook and every cranny. She gets curious about some of the things that I'm like, why do you even care about the fibers of the carpet? I don't get it, but she's curious. And I wonder how far have we gotten from being curious because we thought devotion was becoming serious. We thought that devotion was becoming so much more biblically astute. That we thought it was about being academic and studious, but it was always, always about God having an opportunity to continue to stoke your curiosity. For you to continue to have that wonder. So that you can be able to see how God wants to begin to manifest the amazing things in your life. That see, sometimes we forget that godly curiosity, it keeps us from becoming simplistic legalists who just label everything as either good or bad. And maybe that's been your religious experience. Maybe that's been your spiritual background, that you think that church and being devotional and following Jesus is about, how do I put things in the good category? How do I put things in the bad category? How do I make things, this is black and this is white. And I read the Bible so that I know more about what's black and what's white and what goes over here and what goes in this compartment. And I put these people over there and I don't hang out with these type of people. And I can only see it this type of way. And I'm gonna affiliate with this political party because it's black, because it's white, and this is why I don't talk to this group at this job, and this is why I don't go to this cookout with those neighbors, because it's black and it's white. And God's been saying, where's your devotion? Where's your ability to be curious? Because God is working in all spheres of life. God is calling us in our devotional life to not be black and white, but to help us be able to swim and traverse the terrain of the gray. Because that's where God often lived. That's where Jesus often spent most of his time. He didn't even spend it with all of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He was trying to spend it with people who were trying to figure it out, who recognized that they don't have it all together. And that's what we're about right here at Crosspoint, right? It's a place where people don't have it together. And it's great because we can swim in the gray together. We can help each other traverse the terrain of the gray. But that's where curiosity is. That's where your faith begins to grow. That's where you begin to see God manifesting something amazing in your life, because you don't have it all together, but you're tethered to a God who does. And so this rhythm, it starts with prayer, and then it evolves into this idea of like of devotion. But see, what good is you being able to, you know, have a prayer life and a devotion life if you're not being a part of the activity of God? And so this PDA is not just prayer, it's not devotion, but it's also action, right? It's not just theory, right? Like, Jesus just doesn't work in theory. No, he's a very practical God that wants us to be involved in the activity. See, because here's the thing, you can do prayer and devotion in your private time. But I told you, you can't have private dedication without some level of public display, because that's what action is. See, action is a public display of your private work. That the people on your job or in your neighborhood, they should know that you are a follower of Jesus. That they should know that's where you stand, that's where you are, and not even that's where you stand, but that's where you're open at. That's a space where you began to be able to walk and you become a witness to a life and a rhythm that continue to give, that continues to bless, that continues to show grace and show mercy, and that continues to show love and spread it to people who are on the margins of society, as well as those that are in the most popular spaces of society. This is an incredible rhythm. This is what spiritual disciplines really look like. See, spiritual disciplines are life-giving. They don't take life away. And so, as we think about this idea of PDA, I don't want you to leave, you know, just thinking about how you're going to kiss your boo later, or your wife, or your husband, right? I want you to just walk away thinking about that for PDA. I want to give you some tangible next steps, because I think that this is a great rhythm for each of us to continue to embark upon. And so I want you to take some next steps this week. Maybe you can mark these on your connection card, or you can just kind of maybe jot them down if you want to, just so that you can kind of go back to later. So here's the first next step that you could take, that this may be where you are, and this is a great next step to take. For you to start this rhythm, this new rhythm, to help bring the productivity in your life and to maximize that 1-6-7. The first step is this: you can schedule a time to pray. Something that simple, right? I'm talking about, go to your calendar, right, and set a designated time to pray. Be intentional about it, right? I mean, we learned that you're only going to do like 75% of that which you write down, right? And for me at this point, I'm only doing what's on my calendar, literally. I mean, somebody sent me a calendar reminder earlier this week, but it was on like a different platform. Never made it to my Google Calendar. So guess what? I never made that meeting. So, you know, if that's you and you're in the same boat as me, right, you put it on your calendar. Make an intentional effort to make sure that you set aside time to have a conversation with God. All right, that's one next step. Second next step is really cool. And you know, this next step is something that I think takes a little bit more work, but it's nothing that's too hard, right? And here's what I want you to do. I want you to consider doing rather, right? Maybe write down when you lost your curiosity. I want you to think back about what was the event? What was the traumatic event? Maybe what was the good event? Or, you know, maybe it was when you were like, hey, I'm 16 now, and I don't have time for being curious. Or maybe that's when you became the most curious. I don't know, right? Wherever you are on the spectrum, I want you to take some time, have some conversations, and write down when you lost your curiosity, when you started shutting that down, when you stopped working that skill. All right? Cool. Now, final next step, and this is a good one. This is a one, again, this is the first one obviously had to do with prayer. The second one had to do with like your devotion and curiosity. But then this final one is something that definitely moves toward action. And it's this. Maybe it's an opportunity. Maybe your next step is to volunteer, right? Maybe it's an opportunity for you to be a part of volunteering or serving somewhere. Maybe it's volunteering here. We heard it earlier. We want to expand those children environments, those kids environments to more services. Hey, go ahead and mark that on the connection card. You want to serve as in the tech booth or even in the band, folks on cameras. Listen, if you want to continue to fuel that life change, not just through donations, but also through your volunteering and service, that's an action step. That's something that God continues to put on our hearts so that we can continue to be in this rhythm. And so, you know, you could pick any of those as your next steps or all of those as your next steps. But here's what I know. What I know is that if you began to move in that rhythm of life, you start to see a life that is so fruitful, a life that is so good. And so before I take my seat, listen, I want to invite you all to stand. I want to invite you all to stand. And as you stand, I want you to think about this song that we're going to sing. And the words of this song that we're getting ready to sing here, it actually brings all of this together because your life is built on rhythms. Your life is built on a pace. And when we talk about building a life on a firm foundation, what better foundation to build it on than prayer, than devotion and action, than ensuring that you're in the rhythm of life? Because here's what I want you to know, that God never intended for it to just be about religion, but God wants us to have a rhythm of life. And when we have that rhythm of life, and when it begins to flow, that rhythm becomes something that builds a foundation that all of us begin to benefit from. God bless you.